Navigating the Challenges of the Modern Family. A recent report by the Pew Research Center found fewer than half of children in the U.S. live in what many consider a traditional family. Now, only 46% of kids live in a home with two married heterosexual parents in their first marriage. The change in the American family has been rapid. In 1960, 73% of children fit this description. These statistics go hand in hand with others that are equally as dramatic. Now, 41% of kids are born outside marriage, compared to 5% in 1960. And the number of single parents is way up as well. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll talk with experts who help modern families and the challenges they face. Maine Calling talks love, discipline, communication, and more. But first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Anyone who has raised a child knows there are many challenges along the road to adulthood, even in the best of circumstances. But add in family issues such as separation, divorce, single parenting, or blended families, and there are often even more challenges. Today, we'll get some guidance for the modern family. With me in our studio, Terry DeCoster is board chair of Kids First, which is an organization that supports families of separation and divorce. Betty Friedson is a clinical social worker and the author of Soul Mother's Wisdom, Seven Insights for the Single Mother. Ray Amadon is a clinician who continues to work on a daily basis with parents, children, and families. As always, we want to hear from you. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, that is 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net. You can send a tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. And welcome all of you to Maine Calling for what I think is a conversation of interest to everybody, not just people who are raising their children in a non-traditional family. Terry, how did you come to this issue? How did you come to be passionate about helping families of divorce and separation?
Well, thank you, Jennifer, for having me today. Great question. I tell people Kids First is personal for me because I was a kid of divorce in the 1960s. And I say that's back when the D word wasn't discussed very much. We weren't told very much. There weren't a lot of resources for my family, my parents. And so I was raised as a child of divorce. I also have a stepmom, a stepdad, four stepbrothers and sisters, and a half-sister. And I was divorced myself in the last 5 years. And there are new partners on my side, my ex-husband's side. So I come by it honestly, and I have a passion for it, and I've been involved with Kids First since that started in 1998.
And you were a founding member.
As a founding member. And what drew me to that was when I heard these people were passionate about opening a center, I said, where kids can go and talk about this and talk openly about this. Because in the 1960s, kids were not encouraged to talk about it. Adults often don't want to talk about it. I sometimes don't want to talk about it.
Well, thank you for being here.
So I thought that was a great thing. That's a great place for kids and families to go where they can learn how to do it better.
All right. Well, Ray and Betty, I don't think we've told our audience this yet. You are here as a couple. Tell us your story about how you came to be passionate about working with families and especially what many would refer to as a non-traditional family, even though it is becoming less uncommon and more common in the United States.
Thank you for having us, Jennifer. This is Betty, and I want to say that Ray and I have a story that overlaps, but we each have our own version of our mutual story. For me, my story is a little bit like what Terry said, that I was divorced in the 1970s, and there was very, very little available for support for divorced families and for divorced moms. A single mom. It was very difficult. And then a few years after I was divorced, my ex-husband died suddenly. So I was truly the only parent on the planet for my children. And at the same time, I was going to social work school. So it was an enormous undertaking with very little support, and people didn't discuss these things, as Terry mentioned. now there's more discussion and there's a lot going on. So my two paths were professional and personal, and as they overlapped over the years, I've learned a lot about how to cope, how to manage stress, how to utilize more effective best practices for parenting. And in March, after a decade and a half, I had the book published that I wish I had had when I was a single mother in the 1970s and 80s. So I am passionate about helping single parents, single moms, single dads. I'm passionate about all parents. Part of my story, and Ray can talk about this, it's a little bit of his story too. I've just completed 11 years working within MSAD 35, working with kids and families and learning more than I've given, I'm sure. I've given as much as I can, but I've learned tremendous amount. So, and also teaching Kids First for many years, facilitating the Kids First program. A lot of what I learned doing that is in the book and is in my work as also as a social worker in private practice.
Great, Betty. And that's Betty Friedson. Ray Amadon.
Well, similar to both people, my early life was a big influence on coming into this field. My father got organic brain damage in his mid-30s. So my mom was, for all intents and purposes, a single mom from when I was 10, 11. The manifestation is he totally lost his short-term memory. So he could function keeping his job, but that was it. So then we fell into poverty level because of medical stuff, so that as I developed, studying psychology and understand people became a natural path.
Okay. Well, let's get into the meat of this and some advice and some insights for people who have challenges in their own family. Terry, at Kids First, what do you find are the biggest challenges for families of divorce and separation?
Oh, wow. Big question. I think one of the things parents come in to, if they get introduced to our program first, which is for separating and divorcing families, we have lots of other programs that fall from that, like the one I do, which is step parenting, but first divorce and separation. And they are very fearful about how are their kids going to do. That is their number one worry. Right up there is financial worries, just as Ray just said, often that sends a family into financial spirals. So those are the biggest concerns that they come in is, how am I going to do this for my kids so that they come out of this okay? And then sort of following by that is, how am I going to do this with this co-parent that we can't even get along? That's why we're getting divorced. Good Lord, how are we going to co-parent?
And are you able to hold their hand and say your kids are going to be all right?
Well, we tell them with proper information, expectations, and frankly, a lot of patience, forgiveness, and not getting stuck in positions, yes, your kids will do okay. And no parent goes into this probably being an expert on this. And so we are the experts at Kids First. And why reinvent the wheel? You know, we try to help people learn those best practices, as Betty said, to get through it as best they can.
Betty, the subtitle of your book is Seven Insights for the Single Mother. Talk about challenges for single parents. I'm thinking that some of the biggest might be just logistics, getting your kids where they need to be, and then just not having someone to bounce ideas off of when you are kind of stuck.
Those are right up there for sure, Jennifer. There are so many challenges. Doing it all 24/7, even when there is support, friends, family, sometimes even a new boyfriend, girlfriend, even partner. Ray could probably talk a lot about having seen me struggle still within the 20 years we've been married of still feeling that I'm the biological parent. And I have to say, he's fantastic as a step-parent. I'm still the biological mother. So in the book, I talk about the combination of practical strategies and, we can't ignore in the title, the soul wisdom. And I spend time talking each chapter, one chapter on best parenting practices, some of which I have gleaned and learned from Kids First and my clinical work, and time addressing the importance of developing the whole self, the authentic self, so that one can tap into the inner wisdom that guides the decisions and guides the actions, clearing out what I call the gobble, which is all the negative thinking, the anger, the fear, as Terry said, or the financial fears as Ray's family lived with. These are realities. So one of the ways to deal with those extreme stressors is to develop the inner self. And that's sort of a capsule of what's in those insights.
Boy, that sounds so hard, though. If you're dealing with all the stressors or of raising, probably working and raising children and just being possibly sleep deprived and on 24/7 to be paying attention to and developing your inner self.
Huge. It's huge, and it is hard. So it's a combination of practicality as well as wisdom, as well as inner wisdom. And in the book, I talk about how to weave those together.
Well, give us an example. How to weave that together? What would you say to someone who comes to you and says, I can't do this all?
I say, you're right, it's undoable. First, I would affirm it. It is not doable. And then how do we do the undoable? So one of the ways is to take care of ourselves. Someone would say, well, I don't have time to take care of myself. So taking care of oneself can be broken down into very small units of daily care. You know, in practicality, I would talk with them about, you know, how they do their day. But on the soul wisdom piece, to take 5 minutes to find a moment of peace inside oneself. And it's a journey. It's an evolution. It's not something that one can dictate to someone else, or one can say, well, you're going to do it exactly like this. However, in the book, I do outline what I call schemas that people can follow. One of them is called SOLVE. And each letter is for one step in the solution finding process. So there are ways to do it. The quick version is small units, keep oneself as much in the moment as possible when those worry thoughts come. All the practicalities, the financial insecurities, Ray's mother did it. As hard as it was, she's an example.
Mm-hmm.
And you might want to say more about what strengths you saw in your mother, because she's a good example of how someone could prevail in those kinds of circumstances.
Perseverance. And I think the biggest piece was the old AA saying, one day at a time.
Yep.
You try to do the best you can. Following up with what Betty said, what I tell families, whether it's a single parent or not, all parents are going to fail as parents, and their kids are going to tell them how they failed. So if you know you're going to fail, then you're free to fail in the way that you choose. The idea, of course, is taking as much of the stress off that as you can. A important piece of research that I think is critical for all parents to know is the question that you asked a short while ago is, how do you know if your kids are going to turn out okay? If there's one single factor, which of course there's many, but one single factor is how well they can make sense for themselves out of the events of their lives. Whether that's total mainstream, everything goes smoothly, relatively speaking, or various degrees of trauma, if they can somehow make sense out of it, then they're more likely to adapt and come out in a very positive manner.
And what do you mean by that, make sense out of the events in their lives?
Well, we all, in every day of our lives, interpret stuff going around us. So if they can have some sort of framework where they say, well, my parents got divorced because of their conflicts versus what a lot of very young children do. Well, if I had behaved better, then they wouldn't have gotten divorced. Or if I did this or if I didn't do that, it would have never happened. It's an illusion, and you often have to have kids unlearn that false belief. But it's still something that they have to go through to in order to sort of put things into a context that makes sense. Because if you think about it, if you can make sense out of what's going on around you, then the world becomes a more predictable place. More predictable means more stability, more security, which are key factors for life.
I want to just completely affirm what Ray is saying, and also maybe have Terry say more about what's available in Kids First, because I would have everybody take a Kids First program.
I would too. Yeah. I often refer it.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. It is, you know, practicality, learning how to work together with the other parent.
Well, Terry, let me ask you this. This is a statewide audience. Is Kids First served statewide or Southern Maine? And if you're not in Southern Maine, are there other organizations like yours where people can turn?
Yes, we are a statewide agency for the Kids First program for divorce for adults. Our other programs, and then also a Next Step program, I believe is in Portland and in Topsom. But all of our other programs for our kids groups, our evening workshops, the step parenting for our program, those are all only offered in the Portland area right now.
Okay. But in what Betty's saying is that even if you're not a divorced or separated family, there may be resources at Kids First that would be helpful to you.
Well, we certainly do. We can refer families. We do have sometimes people call us before they're thinking about getting divorced. What should they do? What would divorce look like? Should they talk to an attorney? Should they talk to a therapist? So we do have resources to help people connect before. But most our primary mission is to help families that are in the separation, divorce, and recoupling, remarriage, however you want to say it, step family process.
And we have to take a break, but after the break, Terry, I want to ask you about some advice for step families, because I know that that's a huge part of our population. But we do have to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions as well. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Finance Authority of Maine, committed to expanding business and education opportunities by investing in Mainers' success. FameMaine.com. Casella, committed to improving Maine's air quality through the conversion of landfill gas to energy. Casella, giving resources new life. And Maine State Music Theater, presenting Sister Act June 24th through July 11th. Tickets online at msmt.org.
Remember, it's the higher octave on the upbeats in the bridge.
Hey, Brian.
The new film Love and Mercy is about Brian Wilson, the musical genius who created the sound of the Beach Boys. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with the film's screenwriter, Oren Moverman, and hear excerpts of two interviews I recorded with Brian Wilson. Join us. And wouldn't it be
nice to live? Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. Good news for those of you in the Mid-Coast area. Our WMEP 90.5 Camden signal is, for the most part, back on the air. Our important upgrade has been completed, and we're back running at full power. Please note that the signal may be down here and there over the next couple of days as our engineers complete the finishing touches and adjust all the things that need to be adjusted. Thanks for your patience over the last couple of days.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Modern Parenting. With me in our studio, Betty Friedson. She's a clinical social worker and the author of Soul Mother's Wisdom, 7 Insights for the Single Mother. Terry DeCoster is board chair of Kids First. And Ray Amadon is a clinician who continues to work on a daily basis with parents, children, and families. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I promised before the break, Terry, that I'd ask you this. You lead a group for step families. You every week meet. What are the biggest issues for step families? I'm guessing discipline might be one of them.
You got it. That comes up as a primary issue every group that we offer. There, new couple comes in together often. The new, sometimes a single one stepmom or the biologic parent, but they often come together, and one of their big concerns is how to discipline the kids, how to bring in that step parent or that new partner. When can they have the right, the authority to correct the kids, do disciplining, consequences, punishments, and different circumstances? Well, they moved into my house, so it's my house. I get to set the rules and the punishments and things like that. At Kids First, and the literature shows that that's not how it goes down, really. That's not the best practice.
Really? What is the best practice?
The best practice is to keep parenting with both of the biologic, which could also be adoptive parent, the legal parents, even if they aren't living in the same household. They are the legal custodians of that child and the natural authority. And the problem when we bring in a new partner and they start wanting to discipline, correct, you know, I'm an adult here, and they're searching for a role, they start disciplining the kids. The kids often reject them. And kids do not have to bond with that new person. So I sort of say, go at your own peril down that path. Otherwise, you really need to have, the literature says, you know, many years, many positive experiences to have a real friendship, a real trust with that child before you're able to correct them. Or as our Patricia Papernow, who's a researcher in the field, she says, connection before correction. You have to have a connection with that kid, a positive, trusting, loving connection.
Interesting. So in a blended family where each member of the couple is coming with children, the person who brings those children is responsible for that child's discipline. And it could be very different in the same household for different children.
It could, and it's difficult. Some people come in and say, well, he has kids and I have kids. Geez, he's parenting kids different than I am, and I'm doing it different. That can't be okay, because in a nuclear family, all the children are and we say, guess what? Throw out the rule book. You're now in a brave new world, in a modern family. And sometimes we say it's okay to have sort of separate but equal, even in the same household. And that's hard for people to wrap their heads around.
Interesting. I want to go to the calls in just a minute. But, Betty, before so, I want to ask you about, you know, you're an expert on families, but have this new book about 7 Insights for the Single Mother. Do many women who are, or men too, who are single parents and newly single parents feel very alone in the world? And what is your advice for them?
Indeed, that is true. There's a lot of loneliness in those situations. And my advice is to seek out support networks, everywhere you can, that fits your lifestyle. And that means you're very busy. One of the ways to do that is to find other single-parent families, which is easier to do today than it used to be because there are more, and it's more socially acceptable to acknowledge these things as opposed to 60s and 70s and early 80s. Talk to clergy, seek out a therapist, seek out a support group, seek out other families with whom you can share mutual child care, so that you have time to join a support group. It isn't always easy. However, it is doable, again, with some diligence and with some research. I encourage single parents to seek and use outside support.
I know that you work at a school district or with a school district. Is a child's school a place to turn, perhaps a social worker at the school, a place to turn to find another family to look for that support?
I encourage parents to utilize the resources in the school. Ray and I are both, well, I am just retired from the school, but Ray is continuing in the district, and it's through the special services department specifically. However, any parent can go to the child's teacher, social worker in the school, guidance counselor in the school, someone with whom that parent feels a connection, and say, I need some help for my child. I need some resources for me. because resources for parents will help children. And that's what we're all passionate about, is children.
The phone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We're going to go to John in Westbrook. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I heard that the gentleman made a comment about kids turning out the way the parents want them to turn out. When I was growing up, my parents presented us with the opportunities, and if we turned out the way that, you know, the opportunities were there, and it was up to us to turn out the way we could according to the opportunities. And that seemed to be the norm, but in today's society, why is it the parents have such an emphasis on they have to have their kids turn out the way they want?
Okay, John, you know, your connection is not good. We don't have a great cell phone connection, but I think that I get the gist of what you're saying. And you are not saying that, Ray. You were saying that you just want your kids to turn out fine. You want them to be happy and healthy adults. And you know, I'm guessing that. But he does raise a question just for all families and all parents about how involved in your children's life to be, how hands-off to be. I think this is what John is touching on.
Well, I want to first of all say yes. Knowing how your children will turn out isn't like you don't have a crystal ball. They're not going to turn out exactly the way you want them to. The idea is that they are reasonably happy, reasonably healthy, and have lives that work for them. That was the point. And I don't know any parents whose kids turned out exactly the way they wanted them to. But as far as excuse me, I'm spacing on the
question. Whole idea of how involved or hands-off, I think this is complicated for any family, but especially when you're talking perhaps, as Terry works with, a non-traditional family, the expectations are coming from different places.
Yeah, and this is maybe slightly different than his question, but that involvement, we do, one of the things we say at Kids First is, it's your divorce and not theirs. So in that respect, when parents are going through divorce, we say, this is yours. This is, don't turn to your kids for support. You let them have
Absolutely.
Their life and let it unfold the way, as the caller sort of said, present opportunities for in their world, and that you're doing the adult business of the divorce, that you do reassurances that everything will, we move heaven and earth to be there for you, but divorce is not your responsibility and burden.
Go ahead, Betty.
One of the things that I want to comment on, both Ray's comments and Terry's, you know, we want what's best for our kids is what we're saying. And while we can't guarantee exactly what that's going to be, it, in terms of the connections, as Terry was saying, providing what we can, and Ray is saying we remove from the parents, if we can, that burden of feeling I have to do everything exactly right and perfectly. And so there are guidelines, there are best practices for the children, and one of them is to just really understand that we're not perfect, but we can, as divorcing or separating parents, work together as best we can so the children become the best they can be. That's really the point.
John, thanks so much for calling in. You know, just last night on Fresh Air with Terry Gross, she was doing an interview with Judd Apatow, and he was talking about how his parents were divorced when he was a boy, and how he said this was the era before there was a lot of information about divorce, and my parents fought all the time, and they both told me everything. I'm paraphrasing what he said. You're nodding, but I'm guessing, and I want you to give us some guidance. If you are an adult going through a divorce, how much do you share with your children about why you are so angry with the ex?
Why you're angry with the ex, I would say none. That's the best advice. Hard to follow, but that's the advice. We say do not put the kids in the middle. And that would be knowing that information. I know we hear this all the time, too. I don't lie to my kids. I want them to know the truth. I need to set the record straight. And we say, that there are many things you don't tell your child, and they know this. And so I say, no, that's a little bit of a stretch, and you're just using it as an excuse to draw your kid in, vilify the other parent. And the bottom line is that the child is attached and gets their image, sense of self from the mom and the dad. And if you're putting down the mom, that hurts that half of themselves is from the mom, or putting down the dad.
All right. And Ray, you've been nodding this whole time.
I would say essentially the same thing. I would say it slightly differently is that when the parents, whether they're divorced or not, are having ongoing conflict, the conflict for the adults is external, meaning it's outside of themselves. For the child, because they're biologically connected to both parents, the conflict becomes internal. They have basically a battle or a conflict within themselves that they can't resolve because the parents aren't resolving it, which is another type of stability or lack of in this circumstance.
And one thing I wanted to ask you, Betty, is what about for the single parent where the other parent is absent for whatever reason? But, you know, is not an active part of the child's life. What kind of guidance can you give the parent who is raising the children about how to talk about that other parent?
That actually was my situation after my former husband passed away. The guideline is the same, you know, not to vilify that person, even if you are furious at that person for things that happened before they passed, or the fact that they weren't there, or they disappeared, or they just excused themselves from co-parenting in some way, to continue the best practice that Terry and Ray just explained, keeping your conflict where it belongs, which is with other adults, and to bring what I tried to do was have my children stay connected to their father's family. And there were some feelings I had that might have in some way had me decide it was too painful for me, but I wanted to make sure they had what they could have of their father. Now, one of the things that is implied that I want to say, and I know that Ray and Terry will agree, all of this assumes safety needs are met.
Yes.
That the people that you're going to have your child associate with, including the other parent, are safe. And there are guidelines in Kids First for how to deal with that. But bring as much richness and fullness into the children's lives as one can. That's my advice.
All right. We're going to go to Jonesboro and Margie. Hi, Margie. How are you?
Okay, I'm fine, dear. Well, you know what? You're not going to believe it. I'm looking at a picture with my ex-husband on one side and the new husband on the other, my sons and their girlfriends and the whole family in a portrait, okay? And actually what I told my sons, and one is on each side of me, and that is weird. But at any rate, what I told my sons is that, you know, just like people, sometimes you get divorced because you like one thing, they like another thing, and then that's all there is to it. And we were young when it happened, and he got married again, and there was no problem. She treated them good. And now, of course, unfortunately, last year he passed away. And but the family, his cousin calls me, and his family I talk to all the time. You don't turn your back on the family because you lived with them for so long. And why, you know, just because you got divorced, you don't know them anymore? No, you just got to be good and love everybody.
Terry, what do you think about Margie's story?
I love what she's saying. It's so true. That is a good modern family. And that's one of the things we tell people at Kids First is, guess what? The other parent is still kin to your child. So in some ways, they're kin to you. And the new partner, and that's exactly what Margie was saying, is she's kin to this step family through her child. And the more people who love her child, she's embracing that. I think that's great.
Okay, well, we have to take another break. Great to hear from you, Margie. The phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Jones Associates, providing surveying, land use consulting, and forestry services for Maine landowners. More online at jonesai.com. And Sweetser, helping children, adults, and families address mental health and substance abuse issues since 1828. Learn more at sweetser.org.
This week on Morning Edition, covering the increasingly crowded presidential field.
And I've decided I'm a candidate for President of the United States.
From Jeb Bush to Hillary Clinton to Bernie Sanders, Rick Perry, and everyone in between, we're helping you understand the emerging field of candidates. Listen to the next Morning Edition from NPR News.
And you can tune in for Morning Edition each weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. And join us this afternoon following Maine Calling for Ideas from the CBC. Today's speaker is author Andrew Cohen. He's author of 2 Days in June. That's Ideas coming up after Maine Calling here on MPBN Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, helping the modern family cope with divorce, separation, step-siblings, and more. With me in our studio, Ray Amadon. He is a clinician who continues to work on a daily basis with parents, children, and families. Terry DeCoster is board chair of Kids First, an organization that supports families of divorce and separation. She leads a group for step families. And Betty Friedson is also with us. She is a clinical social worker and the author of Soul Mother's Wisdom, 7 Insights for the Single Mother. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Terry, before the break, Betty was talking about that much of all of the advice we're giving today, everything you're talking about today, assumes safety. And you want to agree with that.
I do. I wanted to have this on my notes here to talk about that Kids First. We actually have a separate program called Kids First for Women, and that's women that are in a situation that is unsafe, where there has been domestic violence. And unfortunately, all the good things we're talking about with co-parenting cannot be done because it's unsafe. But there are ways to work with it. They sometimes call it parallel parenting, and there's all kinds of ways of transferring children so that the parents don't have to see each other if it's unsafe. And frankly, some of the children may not be able to even have unsupervised visit with their parents if it's unsafe. So some of the a lot of the good advice we're giving today is assuming safety.
All right. We're going to head to Edgecombe and Harry. Hi, Harry. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you?
Go ahead.
Well, I was taken to heart by what the last lady said. I have been divorced longer than I was married. I have children in their early 20s, 3 children. And my former and I, when she said she didn't want to be married anymore to me, it hurt my feelings badly, but we never put the children in front of our own issues. I think that's very important for people to understand. If you don't like someone anymore or something happens, you cannot put the children in the middle of liking mom or liking dad. And my children have turned out just fine, thank you. And my former mother-in-law, I call her mom because she is. She's a wonderful lady. And my former and I get along very well. And I just feel it's very important to reiterate, the children are the most important thing. You have to take care of your children. You have to love them and let them know things. But you do not have to let them know adult things when they are children.
Harry, our guests are all nodding at your sage advice today. Thank you so much for calling and sharing a bit of your story. We're going to go to Washington now and Charlotte. Hi, Charlotte. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm curious to know what the suggestions are for folks who are other loving people in the family of parents who do not choose not to vilify the other parent, but who in fact do so at great length and very openly and continuously, and all of us around are sad to try to figure out how to help the kids deal with that. We think these parents should know better, but they don't seem to. And so we're just wondering, how can we help the kids?
Charlotte, that's a great question. Ray said it's very hard not to vilify the other parent. If you're in a situation and a family member, whether you're the one of the exes or whether you're a family member, and you think that one of the parents is not following this code, is vilifying the other, what can family members do?
The approach that I take, and I also would look to the other to their opinions, but the approach that I take is that I say, you do what's right as the, whether it's the other parent who is not putting down the parent who's not making good choices, or you're part of the sort of larger family, is you still do what's right. You still provide a model by which the children can learn that they're supported and cared for and that you're not going to put them in the middle, regardless.
Any advice from you all?
We also use sometimes, we say to sort of not to get drawn in, like you said, into it, but maybe you can touch on it. Some people, well, what do we say? And we use some language might be, you know, this must be confusing for you. Must be hard for you to hear that. So you can sort of validate that they're expressing to you, I'm hearing this, I'm confused, what's the truth? And you sort of can say, all I can say to you is you can see how things are in our home. I do love you. I am doing my best for you every day. I'm moving heaven and earth to get you to your activities. And I'm sorry that you have to hear that. And then we do, if the adults can communicate sometimes with using the motivation of the child, if the adults have, say, a co-parenting coach or something like that, that would be a good place to say, you know, it's hurting your kid. He wants to love you both. He wants to see you both. Can you try not to say those things?
I sometimes will speak to the clients that I see who have a slip, because we all could, and say something to the children that really is not a good idea. And I'll just say, I want to stop you for a minute with a note of caution and very gently redirect to something else they could say. Now, in a social, familial situation where one is not the counselor or therapist, it's very tricky, and no one can control another person's behavior. So I would help the children, if I had a relationship with them and it was a personal situation, to understand this isn't about you. Sometimes grown-ups say things and it may be confusing, but you're a good girl, you're a good boy, and this is grown-up business. So there, it's tricky. We could talk about that for a whole show, but it's very, can't control the other person, mitigate the best you can.
All right. Well, thank you, Charlotte, for your question. I hope these answers were helpful to you. Betty, is the situation different when we're talking about a situation in which two moms or two dads separate?
Well, I'm so glad we came around to talking about same-gender families. Essentially, the guidelines we've discussed are the same. Now, for the kids, there could be an added level of stigma, depending on what community they're in, around having two dads or two moms. But talking about single-parent families with gay or lesbian families brings me to tell you briefly about a wonderful family that has embodied these guidelines. A man married to a woman, these are former clients of mine, man married to a woman, left that marriage because he was gay, became involved in a long-term relationship with another man. The two men and the former wife parented the children. The former wife became best friends with the new partner's mother, and they became an enormous blended family. And now these two children are enormously successful, pretty well adjusted from what I can tell, because all of these people in the nuclear and in the extended did the right things. And it was not gender specific, except, you know, in what part of it was gender specific.
And you were nodding a little, Terry. Is this something that Kids First is seeing more and more of?
Yes, we do have a workshop we do once a year for LGBTQ families. And it is very similar. We say the advice is similar, except they do have another layer of social, especially for the kids. But we do have the same good practices and that you need to do good parenting and that you can make a blended family over time. I like that story.
And, you know, Terry, you brought up the word stigma, and you brought that up in reference to a gay or lesbian family. But, you know, throughout my lifetime, there's been a lot of stigma around divorce and separation and single parenting and things like that. Terry, what's your advice for families on how to deal with this, whether it's from family members, whether it's from the media, whether it's from the church, this feeling of guilt and shame that comes with our culture?
Wow. That's a big one.
And you have 2 minutes. No,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think for kids in particular, we can normalize. That's one of the things about our kids groups is we teach them that the feelings you have are normal. Your family is normal. This is a normal process. So they do feel alone. And that's when sometimes when kids go in private therapy, they do make some progress. But we have heard some good stories about when kids get into groups because they realize, oh, I'm not alone. And that's one of the great things about being part of it. And I even would say the adults. I had one in my step-parenting group last weekend said, on his thing, what did he learn? He said, I feel so glad to know I'm not alone. Some reason, even though divorce and step-families is growing all the time, it's going to become a bigger percentage of our population demographically very soon, according to statistics, everyone feels alone. So when you go into these groups, you realize I'm not alone. And that does bring a normalization and acceptance in that there are many paths to happiness, many paths to recovery. I also tell people never say never. Someone you can't co-parent with today, you might be having Thanksgiving dinner with 10 years down the road or dancing with at your daughter's wedding. Never say never.
Just quickly, I want to tandem on what Terry just said, that I'm passionate about refuting the stigma and the stereotype that single families are broken. Single-parent families are broken. They are intact families. They are whole families. And unfortunately, the stigma, it creates a sense that if I'm a single parent, I must be broken. This is a myth. It isn't true.
That is a great way to end the program today. Betty Friedson, a clinical social worker and the author of Soul Mother's Wisdom, 7 Insights for the Single Mother. Terry DeCoster is board chair of Kids First, and Ray Amadon is a clinician who continues to work with parents, children, and families. And for those in Southern Maine, tomorrow, Betty will read from her book at the Portland Public Library from noon to 1. So you can visit our website or Facebook page for more information, or you can just go. John Keimel ran the board today. Our volunteer Tommy Bazarian answered your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our audio archives by visiting mpbn.net/MaineCalling. While there, you can sign up for our podcast, which is also available on iTunes. The executive producer of Maine Calling is Jonathan Smith. Don't forget that the Maine Calling Book Club reconvenes 1 week from today to discuss Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird. If you haven't read it in a while, go pick up a copy and join our discussion on June 25th. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.